Thank you very much. Okay, so today, those of you who have been to the earlier sessions, we had a little bit more time to talk and interact before the movie and kind of go over a few more things. So I'm going to recap a few things, but then I'm going to move pretty quickly into the film because this is a pretty long film. So just to let you know, we're going to go over a little bit the 12:15 time. Okay, so if you need to leave early or whatnot, lunch will still be there. Lunch will still be open when we're done. You're going to have plenty of time to eat. But just to give you a heads up, this is a little bit of a longer film. And also what this film does is if you've gone to the earlier things, we've kind of been tracking the evolution of cinema and the evolution of the way that cinema interacts with faith. So we've been, you know, identifying these key components that filmmakers use to tell a story. Like, what are some of the techniques that filmmakers use?
Cinematography,
how the camera's used, right? And in Joan of Arc, we have this really kind of crazy, dynamic, wild camera work where it's up and down and moving a lot. And then in The Virgin Spring last night, we had this beautiful, high contrast camera work and a lot of, you know, tableaus and interesting deep shadows. And what other kind of techniques are filmmakers using? Cinematography?
Is lighting part of cinematography?
Yeah, so lighting kind of goes into cinematography, and then it also goes into, like, what's that word for, remember all the wonderful, like, medieval, stuff in last night's movie, right? There was all that stuff on the screen.
The setting.
The props, the costumes, the mise-en-scène. Yeah. Mise-en-scène. That's our fancy film word for the stuff you see on screen and how that stuff is arranged. And then what else did we talk about?
Sound,
audio. And the first movie we saw was silent with that great soundtrack. And then last night there was very little audio and music, but a lot of talking, and that was really powerful. Today's movie has some fantastic singing. Today's movie is The Apostle, and it's directed and written by an actor named Robert Duvall, who a lot of you have seen. He's been in some huge movies, and you probably recognize Robert Duvall. Duvall tried for years to get this movie made, couldn't make it, couldn't get anyone to want to produce it or finance it. Finally, he financed it himself, he directed it himself, he wrote it himself, and he stars in it himself as the main character. Cinematography, mise-en-scène, audio.
Editing.
And what is editing?
Making
choices, what you cut out, how long each shot is, what you juxtapose the different shots with, right? How you combine different shots. Cinematography, mise-en-scène, audio editing.
Acting!
And that's the big one for this movie. This movie, in my opinion, has maybe one of the finest screen performances I've ever seen. Robert Duvall is absolutely magnetic in this film. He fully inhabits the role. He's one of our best actors, and this is one of the great screen performances I've ever seen. And one of the most complex portraits of faith and personhood that I've ever seen, where you really see someone in a full spectrum of them being incredibly dark and sinful, and also incredibly full of the greatest example of spirit that I maybe have ever seen on film. It's a wonderful, wonderful performance. So that's what I want to talk about just a little bit today, is the evolution of acting, right? And those of you who have seen the earlier films can kind of appreciate how we're starting to see it shift. Where did when film was invented, where were the first actors coming from?
The stage.
Right? And so what kind of acting do we tend to see on the stage?
Large.
Why?
Because they have to project the back of the house.
All out to the audience.
Because I'm projecting out to the audience, right? If we were talking about film right now, I wouldn't be prancing around as my wife, my wonderful wife who's here with me this week, would say. Right? I prance around in front of you. And the reason I'm doing that is because I'm trying to connect with the guy up there and you guys back there, right? I'm trying to fill the room. So when film first starts, we see very broad performances. And we call this kind of acting, we can call it, right, presentational. Because the actor is presenting the idea of the performance. They're presenting. So the presentational actor thinks, okay, if somebody's mad, how do they act? How does someone act when they're mad?
out of control.
They shout and they stamp their feet. And it's the surface. The presentational actor thinks from the outside in. They say, okay, when someone's mad, they do that. Or when they're sleepy, how do they act? Or they're drunk, right? They stumble around. Outside in. So in early film performances, and we saw this in Passion of Joan of Arc, you see these kind of broader performances where they're a little bit bigger, right? And they're a little bit more indicating the emotion. And not that they're bad. The performance in Passion of Joan of Arc, I think, is an amazingly beautiful performance. Charlie Chaplin is very presentational, but he's an amazing actor, and you really connect with him. It doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's very surface, very overt. And you still see a lot of presentational acting in things like soap operas, right? It's broad acting. It's obvious acting. You get it right away. As film developed, people started figuring it out. The first movies, wide shot. Then they started being like, well, instead of just showing the whole audience in a wide shot, why don't we show this guy, right? Why don't we do a close-up on him? And it was really radical at the time. But it worked. The audience responded to it. And as they began to figure that out, screen acting changed. And then there was a really famous screen actor who radically changed acting in the 1950s. Marlon Brando, right? And Marlon Brando created a sea change in acting. And his kind of acting we call method acting. And that kind of acting, instead of thinking, what's the surface? When someone's really angry, they stomp and they say, I'm so angry with you. Marlon Brando and method acting and a bunch of other actors, and Robert Duvall comes out of the school of acting. He was friends with Brando and he comes out of this school of acting. And that's what we see in this film. They started thinking, okay, instead of when somebody's mad, outside in, they yell and they say, what do I do when I'm mad? When I'm really mad at someone, when I'm really mad at my wife, it's great to have you here, honey, right? Oftentimes, I don't shout and stomp my feet, right? Instead, sometimes I'm like, great, yeah, we can do that. Right? And that becomes much more truthful than, great, we can do that, right? Than the surface, this interior thing. And the medium, the camera then, picks up what the actor is actually thinking and feeling inside. And so it helped push film into this much deeper, in my opinion, deeper, and I love those old movies too, but a deeper art form where you have an experience of watching the character live in the moment. And they stop using the idea of anger and instead say, when I'm really mad at my wife, how do I act? And that changes film and deepens it. This movie has, and you know, this is what the critics think too, it's not just me, some of the best screen performances ever captured. And all of these elements, right? You're not going to see a bunch of crazy camera work and crazy angles and, outlandish choices, which so many modern movies have. Instead, it's almost so simple. It's almost like a documentary. And everything about this movie is so authentic and real. And it's people really grappling with their faith and their circumstance and their life in all of its glory and ugliness. And the performances I want you to think about is how the actors in this movie aren't putting on a show for you. Instead, they're inhabiting the moment and saying, this is my heart, and I'm showing it to you, and here I am. And it's a different kind of cinematic storytelling than we often see in any movies. Right? This is a masterpiece of authenticity, is what I think. All right, any questions before we get started? A little bit long movie. I hope you enjoy it. And then we'll have a minute just for a little bit of conversation after. But please, I understand if you need to go. And let's go ahead and get started.
How long is it?
2 hours and 10.
Oh, wow.
Or 2 hours and like 6, to be honest. So.
All right. We're a little over time, of course, so if you need to get out of here, you know, you sure can. It's just about 12:35. Just to talk real quick, and you know, just if anyone wants to have any comments, but you know, my daughter right now is 8 years old, and whenever something bad happens or she does something wrong, but even if it's not her fault, she starts saying, I'm sorry," and she gets really upset and says, "I'm sorry," and I, you know, and I ask her, you know, I've been talking to her about it, and she says, "Well, it's because I'm bad, Daddy. You don't understand. I'm bad." And this is why I care about art and movies like this, is because it's such a good way of looking at how deeply flawed we all are and how deeply good we all are. And that what my daughter doesn't understand is that we all are sinners, right? We all do bad things, and we also all do, you know, wonderful things too. And that both of those things are within us. That's, you know, part of why I kind of showed this movie. It's a kind of a capstone to the stuff we've been talking about in other sessions. But to me, it's a really great example of what art can accomplish in that, you know, it's a portrait of this man who does really terrible things. And it's also a portrait of this man who is full of this spirit and life and really does wonderful things. And art, I think, talks about that better than almost anything else. And right now, in our culture right now, you know, in our Twitter social media culture, we want everything to be this or that. We want it to be good or bad. This person is worthless and evil and terrible, or this person is wonderful and we're cheering. And that my experience, at least in the world, is that everybody is a combination of things. And that I hope in my life I can inhabit and understand that better as I get older and help my children understand that too. Yes, sir.
I'm wondering, what were the particularly good things you saw in the way?
Leave that church, filling those people together with a spirit. And I mean, maybe you don't think that is good. But you know, I think
they're so phony.
I think that leaders provide that.
There was no sincerity. Now, compare him to the black minister. I sensed a kindness and a sincere person.
And when you thought him totally phony?
Yeah. No, I don't agree. I don't agree.
I feel the opposite. Yeah.
I think he was sincere, but he, like everybody was flawed.
Yeah.
He was peddling religion. He could have been peddling used cars. He was peddling scarves.
Yeah.
He was just a... Could have been
a charlatan.
Snake oil.
He was that. He was a charlatan.
Yeah.
But he was of something else, too.
Would you have wanted him to be your minister?
No! I wouldn't. but that's you know, part of what it is. I think this guy's an extremely extreme example of like the duality.
Right. A man with some sort of severe personality.
Yeah.
No. Martin Luther King was flawed too.
Yeah.
In many ways, I'm not going to bring it up, but I know he was flawed like everybody else.
You know, that's what, you know, and in working on the films I've worked on about, you know, Dr. King, that, you know, that's a big thing about it, is that, like, Dr. King was doing some stuff that was really inappropriate too. And he also was, you know, maybe saving America. And both of those things resided in him.
Well, when it comes to goodness, I vote for Dr. King over.
Well, but you know, the thing that I think is interesting is that we don't see King in this intimate way. What we see is a sanitized version of our leaders. And I think this is actually what I mean about the dangers. I think what we do is that we deify certain people. And that we then lack the complexity and the flaws that we don't see. And so we think that they're perfect. Whereas I think we really saw Dr. King and Dr. King's behavior and what his intimates have actually taught me about some of the stuff that he did that was, you know.
This man ended up exactly where he belonged.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know. But do you hear what I'm saying too?
Society.
Do you hear what I'm saying too? Is that I think the danger that we do is that we deify some people and say they would never do anything wrong, but actually we all are doing things wrong.
Exactly.
You know, we all are flawed.
Anybody else? Yeah.
I was just thinking how you, when your daughter said she's bad. I was 20 years I spent in parent education in early childhood, and we always, you know, the thing is, you did a bad thing, but you're not bad.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, no, we talk about that all the time. Yeah. But that's, you know, yeah. Anybody else? Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you.